On this episode of Still Loading, it's 3, not 6, damn it. Hey guys, and welcome to the new episode of Still Loading. Today we'll be talking about the classic Final Fantasy VI. I brought my friend Jamie in.
Hey guys.
Who's going to be arguing with me about the title.
Yeah, it's Final Fantasy III.
It's clearly six, though.
Yeah, but the card just says three. I can count.
Alright, can't argue with that. But today we're going to be talking about Final Fantasy VI. And we're going to basically just kind of break down our thoughts on it, talk about the story, talk about the music, talk about its legacy in gaming history. So I guess to start off, let's just talk about the artwork too and everything. So I guess just to start off, let's just break down the story. So it focuses on a group of heroes with, would you say the main character is Terra?
Yeah, the main character is Terra, but it's really everybody. It's everybody's individual story coming together.
Sorry, saw this on Wikipedia. I'm such a good researcher. But no, I mean, it makes sense to me. When they were developing it, they made it seem like, or the developers wanted to make every single character a protagonist, not just have like a main protagonist, but have a bunch, you know, just not just have a main protagonist and have all the other characters be side characters, but each character have their own episode. And kind of makes sense when you think about the game too, because there's lots of different portions, like, you know, it was Locke who snuck out of mm-hmm. South Figaro. Mm-hmm. What are some of the others that you can think of?
Oh, I mean, there's Sabian's story as the second brother of the king, then there's Edgar as being the king and, you know, looking at the empire from his point of view and protecting his people. I think the characters are all built around their own individual stories to make it seem more realistic why they all come together. Because in most games, when characters come together, they have their own backstory or reasons. But in this, they enrich the story of each individual character, making it more interesting when you played their individual parts.
You are playing their backstory.
Yeah, you are. You're playing their backstory, and you're giving a reason as to why they want to do what they're doing in the world,
why they want Kefka gone.
Yeah, exactly.
So the villain of the game, there will be spoilers to Hell and Back, just a forewarning. But the villain of the game is Kefka, but for the longest time, you think it's Emperor Gestahl. So, the world is pretty... I would say the world's pretty rich, right?
The world's pretty rich. All the technology's come along. Obviously, the Empire has the most technology, but everybody's pretty well. They don't have... there's no poverty or sickness. Everybody's just well off and peaceful.
Really well off?
I think it's well off. I mean, you look at...
I mean, until the World of Ruin, but...
Not until the World of Ruin. I mean, but, you look at every individual town you visit in this game, and everybody is just fine. It's a nice town. Everybody's happy. You know, except for that one shady place, the big tower, and the Dark Rain, and the Esper.
Well, that's an abandoned town, too. Yeah. I'm pretty sure, I think.
It's just like a town for
thieves. I hated that town.
Oh, it was terrible.
I hated that. Oh, yeah, sorry, you're right. It's a town for thieves.
Yeah.
That's why.
Everybody else was happy and fun, though.
But, like, I'm a sucker for resistance groups and the evil empire, and that's how it starts off. You know, you play as this character named Terra, well, sort of. Well, yeah, no, you're playing as Terra,
yeah.
And she's accompanied by Final Fantasy standouts, Biggs and Wedge, but it's Wedge and
Vix
or something like that. And you just play with, and then she leads them into this town of Narsh and to discover or to look or to sorry to investigate rather
possible Esper.
Yes, and they don't really explain what an Esper is, but what is an Esper for those who don't know?
An Esper is pretty much just a magical being. That's it. It's just a creature that has a magical ability because the world no longer has magic. That's why they're so interesting.
It's a summon. I mean, in layman's term, it's a summon from Final Fantasy. And they have all the standouts, that, you know, Ifrit, however that. We're going to butcher all these, so don't come
Shiva.
Crying to me.
Ifrit. Ramahu.
Ramahu.
It's like Ram. Ramha.
I was always thinking, like, the first time I read it, I was like, ramen?
Yeah, exactly. I was like, I you see these names in every single Final Fantasy, I just kind of say, that's it. The lightning guy. The lightning. The fire guy.
Oh, I mean, there is a Cid in this too, right? Another one of the reoccurring characters?
Yeah, yeah, there's a Cid in this one.
He's I can't remember where he's...
Beth. Beth. That's what I mean. Celeste. After the World of Ruin. Helps her out and everything. He's still an engineer in this one. Like a mechanic. But yeah, the staple Cid is still in.
I always think it's funny when, like, the names that you get associated with, like, when it's not the character's names, but it's what you name them.
Yeah.
Like, when I was a kid, when we were playing Zelda, everyone, you know, now we know his name is Link, but, like...
Oh, no, I got serious about that real early on. Like, it's not Link. My parents made sure I knew it wasn't Zelda. I was playing Link.
Well, like, I didn't know that, so when I first started playing it, I named it Zelda, and then when I got halfway through the game to, like, because I'd never played a Zelda game up until that point, so, and I got to actually meeting Princess Zelda, I was like, God, are you shitting me?
Zelda meets Zelda.
So, this is crazy.
We named all our characters fun things, like, we were into Street Fighter, we named Sabian Ryu, because that was super cool, and we didn't like Edgar's name, so we named him Edge, because we just got done playing Final Fantasy II, and, like, those names are similar. So
Edge is a better name, let's be real here.
Yeah, I don't like Edgar. It's terrible. It doesn't fit at all.
No, it doesn't. to be honest, like, the names in this weren't that
Terra great. And Locky were great names.
I also like Sabin a little bit, or Sabin.
Sabin was good, yeah.
But, and, I mean, Shadow doesn't have a name. I mean, Shadow, but, like, yeah. Edgar, I'm like, who wants to play as Edgar?
Yeah,
that sounds like a dad.
Yeah, not
you know.
So much.
I mean, or probably a lot of hate for, it, but who cares? Like, everyone has their opinion. But yeah, so you start out as playing as Terra, and you investigate this Esper in the town of Narsh. Mm-hmm. And I love the steampunk look of it. Like, yeah. I love the artwork of the game.
Giant mechs in the small little village.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And every, like, all the steampunk, just the steampunk vibe of it, like, the airships that you end up, well, I thought it was weird there's only, like, quote-unquote, one airship in the world.
Oh, that's all right. Final Fantasy games do that all the time. Like, you get Seven, like, Final Fantasy Seven, one airship. They had Cid with his little biplane thing, and then you have one giant airship.
Well, I loved...
That's it. One in the world.
That doesn't make any sense to me. Like, if the technology's out there to do it, there's not going to be just one.
It's an alpha plane.
And that's why I like... It's an alpha plane.
That's it. That's it. First design. Number one.
That's why I liked Final Nine, because they act like... You played Final Nine, right?
Yeah, they had, like,
technology. When you go into Lindblom, that first city, and there's just, like, airships everywhere. Like, just...
Makes sense.
Just drowned in airships.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody should have one.
But in three. it's just one, which I always thought was weird. But yeah, so I keep saying it over and over again. She's investigating the Esper, which you find out later is a summon.
Mm-hmm.
She's under being mind controlled in this mech suit by those two soldiers, by the Empire.
She's got a crown.
She's got a crown. And
you can't see, but she's got a crown on. They imply it. They talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, well, you can only do so much with those tiny sprites. You can add so much detail.
True. But yeah, she's got a crown on in the beginning that's not really talked about too much. And then it gets knocked off when she falls down that pit. And then she starts coming to. And I think it's been... I don't know if they actually say how long it's been, but it's been a while that she's been wearing it. So she really doesn't have a clue when she comes to.
And that's why Locke meets her there.
Yeah.
He's a thief. Yeah, he's a thief.
Oh yeah.
The thief meets her there, and basically promises to protect her until she gets her memory back.
Yeah.
So they escape Narsh and go down to South Figaro. No, not South. I'm just sorry. Figaro.
Figaro at this point.
Where they meet Edgar, the king, and find out he's honestly one of the best characters though.
That's because he's a
stupid
man.
Name.
Everybody loves a ladies' man. That's why he's the best man.
No, he's got the crossbow.
Well, I mean, he's got the auto
and
auto
the chainsaw. Bow.
Yeah, that changed his character, his tools. What makes him interesting? His fucking grin he's got when he uses it too. Like, he goes to somebody with a chainsaw with his grin on. It's like,
he puts like a Jason mask on. He puts like a Jason mask on, just and has like, and then the whirlwind move and everything. But you meet Edgar, and you eventually meet his brother.
Yep. By the way, Edgar is so overpowered in the beginning to middle of that game. It's ridiculous.
Is
ridiculous.
Doesn't yeah, yes. It's been like a couple months that I played it. I still remember, like,
you go into every battle, auto crossbow. Well, they're all dead.
And the thing is, like, when I first started playing, I'm like, does he ever run out of crossbow? Like, because I thought crossbow, I'm like, arrows. He's going to have bolts or arrows or something. No, he shoots that?
Never runs out. Unlimited arrows.
Just keep spending. That's all. That should be your only move. There's no reason for Edgar to not use one of his special attacks.
Oh, yeah, no. If you ever use attack as Edgar, it's a terrible, terrible idea. You're wasting your time. Even magic. He's pretty decent at magic late game. But it's all of his tools. That's it. All you do is make sure you buy the right tools, make sure you spam those attacks, and then you're good to go.
Who were your go-to, like, mages? Terra was my white mage.
Well, no. Terra is the black mage.
You use Terra as the black mage, yeah, okay.
You hit her and you turn her into morph and doubles that magic damage and nuke it. Celeste is the white mage. She's got rune to absorb the offensive magic, and then...
Oh, no wonder I had such a hard time. I totally switched that shit up.
Oh, yeah, no. Celeste has that rune, which is amazing. It took forever for me to figure it out the very first time I played it. I was also, like, 10, but the rune is, like, the most overpowered thing in that game.
I don't even know what the rune is. I don't think I got it.
Her natural ability is just rune. Like her.
What does that do?
It just absorbs the next spell casted. It just nullifies it completely, and I think it refunds magic back to her. So the enemy casts magic spell. She just absorbs it. And she gets magic back, and then she can just recast.
So, for any, like magic-based enemy, just use rune every other move, essentially.
But, if she casts rune, and then your guy casts a spell, she absorbs that spell, so it's a time attack thing.
Oh.
So, you can cast it, and then hit him with basic attacks, so you gotta wait for the enemy to do it. Like, cast a magic spell.
So you could cast a magic spell on her from... Like, an ally could cast a magic spell on
anybody,
her.
And it would automatically go right to her. So she's kind of like one of those, like...
Oh, wait, so she absorbs any magic. Not just on her, on anybody.
Yeah, so it's part of, like, the... Nice thing about 3 is that they had that team-building stuff. Like, they had the, you break it down. You know, you build, like, teams of 3 and 4s. Like,
yeah.
You know, she was, like, one of those pivotal characters. Do I put it in this group? Do I put it in that group? Do I put it in a group that doesn't have magic casters? Yeah.
All right, well, let's keep going on the gameplay talk, just to wrap up the story, even though we never even got anywhere.
Yeah.
Basically, you meet a bunch of characters, they all get split up, they all end up coming back to Narsh, and then you find out Kefka is really the bad guy, and we'll talk about the ending later. I mean, we didn't go anywhere with the story. I mean, the story is really good, but it's... The
story's about 12 people coming together, about 12 people, enough to make 3 parties of 4. So 12
Which
people.
Which is crazy. Yeah, that's a lot of playable characters.
It is. So it's 12 people coming together with their own individual stories to make 3 parties of 12 so you can beat Kefka at the very end of the game. And then everybody has a backstory while they're there. That's really it.
There's no way I would be... Like, unless I had it all written down, there's no way I'd be able to remember all the backstories. The ones that kind of stand out is Cyan's, where, like, you know... wasn't in South... Whatever Cyan. Kingdom he is.
Oh, no, his story was great. I mean, it was a kid. Yeah. His was dark. It's just, we have a castle, we're super cool, yeah. We're totally fortified, hey, and I'm then, Kefka, let's go ahead and poison the water.
That's exactly it.
Yeah.
That was, like, I played it for the first time, like I said earlier this year, and I was like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I actually felt the gravity of that.
What was great is that he's literally standing there in his castle, like, yo, we're so secure, we're great, and then all of a sudden he smells poison, he detects poison in the air. Runs down a couple flights of steps and everybody in the castle is literally dead already.
Everybody just
drank the grape juice at the same poison. Time.
Kefka just took a dump in the river and, like, it was that toxic.
Yeah. No, but that was a good one, though. And then that storyline with him, Sabin, and, I always forget his name. The kid.
Oh, the little girl, or...
No, the wild man.
Gal,
that's right.
I never played his, but I didn't like his backstory.
He's just a kid out on the plains, pretty much.
I didn't, like, he was one of, like, there's always that one character in every Final Fantasy game that I really don't like.
Like Cait Sith.
Cait Sith from FF7.
Freaking horrible.
Or Yuffie from FF7.
No, Yuffie's
at least useful,
yeah.
So she has one step up on Cait Sith.
I like her as a character. I didn't like her as a playable fighter. And she also had her own side quest.
But didn't Cait Sith also suck in both those aspects
Cait Sith was a terrible character as general, and he just kind of was just no fun.
I mean, you could really tell that Cait Sith was always just there like, alright, we don't know how to push the plot along to the next thing that we want. Let's add this character.
Yeah, he was terrible.
It was just
bad. I don't want to talk about him. He's terrible.
And Final 8, I know you didn't like Final 8, so we're not going to dwell on it too long. There wasn't too many characters in that I despised.
The terrible character in that is the assassin who couldn't pull the trigger and assassinate somebody.
I forgot.
Your job is being an assassin. You can't assassinate. It's ridiculous.
I forgot.
And he gets a shotgun.
You had a whole
He's not an assassin. He's a shotgun. I'm a ranged assassin with a shotgun, everybody. Let me just snipe this guy.
And then I would say 9 is Queena. Even though she's useful, I don't like her as a character. Queena is a giant white thing.
Right. She eats and then...
Yeah, but apparently, like, if you can, like, actually...
You can replace Queena, and you can replace Gao with the Final Fantasy VII Materia enemy skill. That is literally their character to a T.
Yes.
Hey, they use their ability. I learned your ability. There it is. You're literally a materia. That's you're not even worth a person.
Exactly. Yeah, but they always decide to add these characters to the game. Just to maybe.
That's what that is.
I like that. Yeah, they just always
have somebody to hate. Absolutely.
That's how you band everyone together.
It's not a whiny character. It's a terrible character.
So, yeah.
Yeah, 3 didn't really have too many terrible characters.
No.
The only thing I
just didn't like Gao. That was really it. What's his backstory then? Because I just didn't do his side quest.
Oh, he's just a kid who's abandoned.
You meet his dad or something like that. That's his side quest, I'm pretty sure.
I don't remember his exact... He wasn't that impressive to me. Nor was the artists who could recreate monsters to attack for you. That lost me at the end of number 3, too.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I didn't like their... I liked the story. I didn't like their skills, but...
Yeah. There's one... you get a guy later on. Maybe it is the artist, but he just mimics. That's his only move. He can mimic.
That's it.
He mimics the last move that someone did. Mm. So what you would
double down on damage.
Yeah, I always stuck him with Edgar.
Oh, there you go.
So I would have Edgar do chainsaw, then I would do mimic Edgar... And he would just chainsaw right back. Cool. So you could double down and do a ton of damage.
That's right.
So you could really potentially have a high, like...
Damage output.
Yeah, DPS output with this team.
Before you max out your level and you just go in there with Locky and max damage 8 times in a row and win. But,
He can do that?
Oh, yeah.
See, I only played this once, so I don't know all these strategies.
If you gear Locky correctly with the right items, because he's the fastest character... He can attack at maximum damage 8 times in a row and just beat Kefka. Just swing.
Really?
Kill. Yeah. Oh, I mean, you have to be max level with him and everything, and it's just one of those, like, super endgame things that if you're level 99, it doesn't really matter at that point.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Because everything's just going to fall.
Everything just falls apart anyway.
Well, I mean, FF7, they don't really... I mean, level 99 still isn't enough to beat the Ruby and Emerald weapons in Final Fantasy VII.
Oh, no. No, those were the grind. That was, like, endgame content for Final Fantasy back
in the day. My friend... hit level 99. Like, he spent however many hours... Because FF7, I would even argue, takes longer to hit 99 than most other games. Most others.
Yeah, because they added the weapons.
But, yeah.
Yeah, that's 7.
Yeah.
3, I beat Kefka, and I was done. I was like, by the time the World of Ruin hit, I was like, wow, this is really cool. Good to know everything I've done up to this point was for nothing. Let's do it again. And by the time I hit World of Ruin, round your guys up, do a little bit of the leveling, get your magic up in that magic tower, and I was like, done. Let's just go kill Kefka and get this over with.
And I didn't like having to round up your characters again.
Because
especially once you get to the end and realize that you really need every single character to beat this game. Like, you can't just ignore a side quest. That's what I think bothered me a little bit. But, like, you can, like, because there's a couple people, like, characters you don't have to get
about,
like, Umaro and Mog or whatever.
Yeah, right.
Like, you don't need those characters.
Mog,
like, it's kind of a... I looked it up online how to get the side quest. You go back to Narsh and you find him in, like, a glacier or something like that.
Okay.
And but the thing is, that's another character that would be definitely helpful.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, what are you supposed to, like, I don't know. It just irked me that, like,
body in there, fight on.
It just irked me that, like, because you had a max of 12 characters, you almost need all 12 to actually beat that game.
Well, that's true.
Unless you level them up to hell and back.
Yeah. Well, I like the idea of rounding up the guys in the end, because it's supposed to be, like, 1 year later, which doesn't feel like 1 year. It feels like 5 years later, because of how destroyed everything gets. But it's, like, 1 year later, and then you get to see where everybody's at. Because, again, it's their own individual stories you've been following up to this point.
And you start out with Celeste, I believe, right?
Yeah, you do, actually, which is a good choice to me, honestly. But no, I like the idea that you go around and collect everybody because you've been following their individual stories to this point. So you're just continuing those individual stories. Okay, well, the world fell apart. What's everybody up to? So
that is a really interesting storytelling. Well, and like, or storytelling idea, but like, Celeste and Locke are like, they have a love interest, if I remember correctly. I know, but it's like very,
a little bit,
it's very like coy. Like they're always kind of like, they don't actually come out and say it, but you know that they like each other. And it's not like a will they... I guess it is a will they won't they type kind of thing. It's not on and off again, but it's like a will they won't they.
If there's romance in this, it's between Locke, Celeste, and Tara. Yeah. Tara that's your triangle you're working there.
Didn't Tara get No, Edgar has his own girl.
Yeah, Edgar's a king. He has whoever he wants. He's a bling boy.
And then Saban, I think, like, swore off, like, any type of relationship because he's a monk. Well, sort of.
Yeah.
So, Edgar pretty much has his pick of women. Saban doesn't really care.
No.
And,
Locke's a flirt.
Locke is a flirt.
That's what he does.
I mean, you
he's
do...
He's a con man, to a certain degree.
You have so the... No, the other characters I didn't really like that much. The old man and the daughter. That's who you're talking about. Yeah, the artists,
Who just wave their magic little painting wands and recreate monsters or whatever.
Well,
I like their story. I did not like their abilities.
Yeah. You never really use them. No. Shadow would... If I would have saved Shadow when Kefka...
Shadow's amazing.
If I would have saved him...
the ability that if he gets hit 50% of the time, he auto-counterattacks. Blocks and counterattacks. Amazing.
I should have saved him. Yeah. I would have made fighting Kefka 10 times easier. So, to kind of put a spoiler out there, Kefka, like, once you... Basically, you know, you're fighting... The characters are fighting against this Empire. I know we've gone all over the place, but whatever. But fighting against the Empire, and the evil Emperor Gestal is trying to go into the... You find out the Espers have their own world, and they've come into this world, and that's where the... Like, magic is very prevalent in the Esper world, but it's not in here. And so when Espers snuck through, that's where all the magic wars happened. So once the Espers realized what they're causing and how, like, they were being abused, they went back. Well, they went back, and then Gestal, ever since that, the Mage War or whatever, is trying to get that power back. So he's trying to figure out a way to break into the Vesper world, or Vesper, sorry, Esper. Vesper's from James Bond. The Esper world. And so... and so he breaks in, and the whole time you think that it's gonna be like him, but then Kefka, evil Emperor leading charge, and he is truly evil. Like, he says, "Oh no, I'm not gonna do this anymore," and then he tricks you and he betrays you, and then Kefka betrays him.
Yep,
and Kefka just gets drunk with power. Like, that's a sense. He literally is the Joker of video games.
Yeah, I agree to that. He just wildly laughs. You can't not love that wild laugh.
Or whatever it is.
Yeah. He's just a dick who just wants to watch the world burn, and he does it by accumulating power as many different ways he can. I mean, even when he becomes like the god, or not even like a god, but super powerful, he literally leads the Emperor into a trap, right? That he goes, he takes the power for himself, he kills the Emperor within that power, and then he destroys the statues where he gets the power from, so nobody else can get it, because he's just a dick. He just wants to take power, to kill other people, to rule for fun. And that's pretty much what Kefka is. That's why he's so great, because throughout the entire game, he just laughs at you, and he tells his soldiers to kill you, or he kicks his soldiers, or he just doesn't care about the men he's under.
Like,
he just controls them.
I would love, like, someone who has a degree in psychology or something to break down that character.
Oh.
See, like, what problem he has. Because obviously, my guess is he's a sociopath.
Probably.
Like, he just can't empathize at all with anyone.
He doesn't empathize. There's no point in the game where he ever empathizes. He's the one that dumped the poison to kill a whole kingdom because he got tired of outwaiting them to speed that process along.
Exactly.
So, no, he just wants to kill everybody just to kill everybody. Which is honestly the best kind of video game bad guy you can get, because there's no justification, there's no reason.
You can't talk about Final Fantasy without talking about the other games. Like,
yeah, true.
So, like, Sephiroth is, like, he's a tragic villain. Like, they tried to paint him as a tragic villain, because, you know, he was created by a genetic experiment, and, like... As Mega Ran describes in his lyrics, my whole life was a lie. Everything I've loved become tainted, was spit on, defiled, poisoned. And I loved and cherished, whatever it is. But he, but like, he realized that everything he loved was just a lie. Like, his whole
life. Yeah, but he was a crybaby.
Oh yeah, he was a huge
crybaby. His life was totally fine. Then he decided to throw it out the window. Even though learning the truth, it's like saying, "Hey kid, your life is great, but you were adopted. Okay, bye." You don't throw a temper tantrum and kill the world.
Exactly.
That's Sephiroth.
But Kefka just batshit, like, care about
There's
anything.
There's no backstory to Kefka. You see him the first time in Figaro, like, an hour into the game, and all he's doing is threatening kingdoms, and then shouting at soldiers to kill you, and then he just continues to do that to the end of the game where he gets power to try and kill you himself.
And then he kills the soldiers who can't kill you.
Exactly. Yep.
He just he is a good villain. But the crazy thing is, like, with almost every game you play, the hero wins. Mm-hmm. And this is one of the few games that you play where the hero does not win.
It's the first game in the Final Fantasy series, too, where you just don't win. Like, you put up a good fight, and that like big end scene where you're at the Empire's place, the whole Esper thing goes down, and you just lose control of the situation. That's the first time in Final Fantasy where you lose. You don't save the world. The world is ruined. Even by the end of this game, you win against Kefka. The world is ruined already. You have to deal with it now.
And that's such an interesting... It's a weird message to impart, especially because, probably this is going to be played by children, like, back in the 90s. Yeah, well, so, like, I'm not saying that as a negative thing, like, but it's, like, that's a really bold statement to make that, like, no matter, like, you, but in a good way, because if you really think about it, like, it's showing the kids, like, or not just kids, but everyone people. Who plays it, people, that... Yeah, you can try your hardest, and it's going to go to shit. Mm-hmm. Like, sometimes it's just not going to work. Mm-hmm. But the world of Ruin, you can still come back. Like, there's still, like,
right.
you're alive still. Yeah. Like, the game, for all intents and purposes, the world ended after Kefka destroyed those three statues.
Yep.
But the world kept going.
Yeah, once you kill him.
Everyone still survived. Yeah. A lot of people are still alive.
Yeah, those people that are left.
The people that are left.
To survive.
I mean, granted...
it's like a Mars kind of planet now, where there's no life, but... The idea is that you try, and you fail, and then you try again.
And then you finally succeed on the second time, but you can see you try something different the second time, mm-hmm. though. And it ends up working. The final fight is you literally going up a tower to kill Kefka.
Yeah.
And you have to use your party, and it was an interesting way to end it, because if I remember correctly, it's like three or four different levels of bosses. Like, no, you have to fight your way through this whole, like, labyrinth of, not much of a labyrinth, but, like...
It was more of a labyrinth, because you could start the Kefka fight at any time, I remember. Like, you could take
really?
A ship. Yeah, you could take your ship, and you could fly straight to Kefka at any time, and start that fight. It would drop you down in that labyrinth you're talking about.
Yeah.
And then, if you guys were strong enough, you could make your way through the labyrinth. Each one would go to each... statue that gave him his powers and destroy it, and then you would fight Kefka.
Yeah.
And, like, that was the start of the tower, is like that magic tower where you just keep climbing. Like, that was one of those, like, open world end things to, you could only use magic.
Oh,
magic
yeah, no, tower. No, sorry, yeah. I'm not, yeah, I didn't do that. I'm thinking of the Kefka thing, where you
go through the maze. Yeah, the magic tower was BS. I don't know, it was good, but you had to, like, level your espers, and that's the grind of the game. Like, I thought it was good.
Did you actually do it when you played the first time?
No, I didn't get all the way to the top of the tower. When I hit the World of Ruin, I was like, that's it. I beat the game. Look at that. Look at those cinematics roll. And
look
then
at
I realized
that
there
sunset.
Was more to it. And I was like, ugh. Like, at that point, I was just like, let's gather the guys. Let's do some hardcore leveling. Let's just get this game done with. Because, like, it was all on rails the whole time. It's just storyline straight. This is what we're doing. And the World of Ruin is, like, Final Fantasy's first attempt at open world. And the open world was interesting, but by that point I was kind of ready for it to just
to
bring
done.
It home to the end.
Yeah. I never really thought of... I mean, maybe that's why I like the old Final Fantasy so much, because I tried playing, like, 13 and, to a smaller extent, mm-hmm. 12, and I couldn't get into them because, like, it becomes, like, a big open world towards the end, and I'm realizing more and more I don't like open world games.
Well, no, I mean, open world games are great, and, like, storyline games are great. But when you take a storyline game like Final Fantasy, like 2, 3, and say, all right, you're here in this town, you have one objective to go to that town to this town, this place to that place. And then at the end of the game, you're like, all right, well, here's an open world, have fun, because you're just entirely used to spending 30 hours, one spot to the next spot to the next spot, and then it says, open up and play. And then it's kind of like, well,
it's
that's not what this entire
almost.
Game just taught me. And then the same thing with open worlds. If it's open world, great, it's open world. But then people hate it when open world games force you down one particular path, because that's not what the game's teaching you. Teaching you open world and then go down that path is not part of the open world experience. It's kind of like trying to switch styles of games at the end of the game.
Yeah. I could see why that would be a little frustrating, or a little confusing more than
anything. Yeah, because the idea of a game is supposed to teach you how to play it while you're playing it, and then just change the idea of the game at the end of it, saying, hey, everything you've learned, do that, but in this completely different way of doing it.
But at the same time, I like that idea because it gives you that's how they add the side quests on. It lets you, it basically adds a bunch of, I shouldn't say this in a mean way, but it's almost like a cop out. Like you like. Mm-hmm. All right, we're at the end of the game. What if they're not leveled up enough? Or what if we want to add more content to pad this out?
Mm.
Open the world up, add side quests.
True.
So that gives you optional things. Because by then, you're already 20-some-odd hours deep into the game.
Mm-hmm.
But then you can just, you know,
do whatever you want if you really like the game. My thing is I beat games. Like, I add to a game list. So when I get to the end of the game, I just want it to be the end of the game. Like side quests.
Like 100% side quests, or
no, I don't do side quests.
Just credits roll. That's good.
Credits roll. That's all I need for it. Like side quests are fun for people who really enjoy the game, and I do like 3, but like I am not a big side quest guy. So I'm all about rounding everybody up for their storyline purpose. But then once I got them rounded up, I don't want to grind too hard. I just want to get it done.
What was that game that your mom played that, like...
Rogue Galaxy.
200-plus hours?
Rogue Galaxy. Oh, my God. No, it wasn't. It wasn't even 200-plus. I think she capped it out the 999.
Really?
I've never played Rogue Galaxy, but apparently there's, like, missions you can do. And she wasn't even 100% on all the missions. When she plays games, she plays it hardcore. She did that with 7, too.
Really?
100% completion.
Even beat Emerald and Ruby?
100% completion. That's what she does when she puts a game... Like, wow. She played Star Ocean, second story.
Second Voyage or
no,
something?
No, second story, yeah. It was a PlayStation game.
Yeah.
And same thing. 100 hours in the game. Capped it out. Everything. Multiple endings. All characters. Yeah, she was crazy when she plays RPGs. I can't do that. RPGs are so vast that... Well, I mean, 3 wasn't bad because it's like a 30-hour game. But, like, any more, like, RPGs take forever.
Especially JRPGs.
Oh, yeah.
Like, even, like, the Bravely Default... I was talking to you earlier about Bravely Default. Off mic, we were talking about Bravely Default. And how it's, like, basically the new Final Fantasy. Final Fantasy... It's, like, an old Final Fantasy, like, done in a modern way.
Okay.
Right? Yeah. And I've been told numerous times that it's, like, an 80-hour game.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, how do people have time for this? Like, the... What's most frustrating, I love JRPGs, but like you need to be able to sink a day into it.
You can't just like JRPGs. You need to love JRPGs.
So actually, exactly.
Like our friend Micah, he plays Tales of Symphonia and he's played that game through all the way. And he's played the game through on New Game Plus, and it's like an 80-hour run through every time.
Well,
like,
and he's also played Tales of Vesperia. How many times?
Yeah, exactly. I can't.
That's a lot.
That's why when he hits the end of the game, I don't do side quests. I just go right for the end of the game.
I love side quests. There's only one game that when I replay it, I go all out for the side quests, and it's FF7. Like every time I replay it,
yeah.
I gotta get Knights Around. I gotta get Omni Slash. Though the last time I caved and I didn't get.
No.
Excuse me, Knights Around, because I was doing all the chocobo breeding, and then something screwed up, and then I would have had to restart back from scratch, and I'm just like, no. I'm just going to go beat Sephiroth. It's not even going
to
be hard.
Seven was so much fun to me that by the end of the game, like, I couldn't do the weapon grinding. Like, I didn't want to fight the weapons, but, like, the whole storyline for Seven was so good that by the time I beat it, Sephiroth, I was like, that is perfectly satisfying. Not that I didn't want to do anything more, but I beat Sephiroth, and, like, that's it. Game over.
That's it. I mean, that's kind of why I think that I like it more, a little bit more than 6, mm-hmm. 3, what?
3.
because, Arson like, when three. I when I finished, when I beat, I won't lie, when I beat Kefka, mm-hmm. I was cheering. I was like,
because they built that up, like, the cinematics in that game, like, I don't even want to talk about music. Like, the music for 3 was great. Like, if you, like, follow the progression as far as the American Final Fantasies from 1, 2, and 3, or 1, 4,
and 6,
right? 1 had really great, awesome music, right?
Mm-hmm.
Love that music. 2 just made it better because it was 16-bit quality. And then 3 just took it and said, all right, well, let's just do all this emotional music, amazing, best boss and battle music in general. Well, and it just sets the stage for all their, like, cinematics.
And when we were playing earlier today, just walking around the cave, I loved the cave music. One thing that it kind of hit me in more recent years, the more I play Final Fantasy games, or just more games in general, atmosphere music.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Final Fantasy VII, all of the music in that game has a very distinct feel, mm-hmm. and I like it. Like, I can hear it and know exactly where it is in the game. Right. Now, I haven't played 6 as much, so I won't have that right just yet, but I know if I play it again and continue to replay it and stuff like that, it'd be the same thing. Like, hearing that cave music in Narsh when, like, Tara was escaping with Locke, I heard that. I'm like, wow, this is, like, I remember
the cheering
this.
Music? Like, yeah. Like, the really, like, heroic, like... Yeah, it's like... It's, like, really, like, all right, it's time to be a badass and go be a hero. Let's go do this. Like, that's the kind of, like, music they have. Or, like, the sad, somber music. Sober music.
And then they even tried opera in this.
Oh, yeah, no, they didn't try. They succeeded at opera. It's the only game where an opera scene didn't suck. I actually really enjoyed the opera scene in this one.
Really?
Yeah, I actually really liked it. Because, like, as a kid, I was like, I have to study. I have to read these opera lines in order to figure out how to get through it, not waste my time. Like, I actually really enjoyed the opera scene.
I liked it. It was a little aggravating. I actually just had the strat. I was like,
there you go.
I'm like,
this
when,
one, that
I'm
one.
Like, yeah. When
I was a kid, the first time I played it through, I didn't read it. I was just like, this line makes sense. This line makes sense. And I realized I was half decent in opera. I was like, oh, I know the next sentence.
Now, have you ever tried singing that to your wife?
Yeah, it sounds horrible. I mean, there's no words in opera. You just go up and down in pitches.
Well, no, there is actual words in opera, but, yeah, but like, not in their opera.
I don't enunciate the words.
Not in their opera.
I just shouted them.
They had a pretty... I mean, to take opera and try to condense it down to a 16-bit type of thing and keep the vibrato, they did pretty good. The sound design was pretty impressive with that.
Well, that whole scene was fun just because the octopus, such a dick.
I don't remember his name. I just the first time you see him is on the raft, like you're going down the river, rafting down.
And
the
he
river.
Just pulls somebody in. He's like, "All right, well, I lost, but I'm going to throw you in the river. Bye, Sabian." Yep.
I hated that character. It was hilarious. He was real, and in the World of Ruin, doesn't he come back and he's like this pathetic thing? I forget what it
I
was.
I think he might actually.
He's nice though in the World of Ruin, I think.
Yeah, because he's not a bad guy anymore. Because he's not the baddest bad guy.
When he realizes that Kefka's worse.
Yeah.
So, all right. So we've been all, but to kind of recap where we have been so far, the storyline is really fun. It's really good. It takes 12 different characters. You play through all their backstories and you play through all their reasons as to why they need to fight Kefka.
While
and why.
Still moving forward in the main story. Still.
Exactly. So it's a really well written story.
It is.
And so y'all meet Kefka. He destroys the world.
Yep. Slowly but surely,
he destroys the world. And 1 year later, you start back with Celeste on this deserted island, and her father? No. Sid
takes care of him.
And then Sid dies.
And that's where it gets really dark, because you come back to the world and you realize that, oh, this person's been taking care of me for a whole year. Literally just died.
That was intense
for a Final Fantasy game. It's got some
very dark,
sad
stuff.
Emotional scenes in it from Locke's girlfriend, who's in a coma, and that's the whole reason he ran away. To Sid dying and her coming back on a deserted island in the World of Ruin. To the whole castle being poisoned, everybody dying. It's got some really dark moments. It's got some dark scenes.
And so then you go back and you defeat Kefka, but the world's still in ruin. Yep. That's essentially the story. We've talked about touched on a little bit of the music, how atmospheric it is. Some of the memorable scenes, some of the memorable music, the boss theme.
Mm-hmm.
We've also talked a little bit about the artwork with the steampunk vibe.
Detailed backgrounds and everything.
And we even talked about a little bit of the gameplay, the actual, I'm still blown away by how many different things you do, because, like, you seriously dropped some knowledge on me that I had no idea about, like,
with all the different... Yeah, the content is pretty ridiculous. Like, the game is broken when you hit level 99. I mean, when you hit level 9, max level on any game, it's, by that point, it's stupid to play, you're gonna win. But, like, in this one, there's unique items that you can combine from each character. That makes it ridiculous. Locke's thing is just a broken max damage 8 times right in a row by hitting fight once.
Still can't believe that you hit level 99.
Oh, I never hit level 99. I didn't. I looked it up when I was back, forever ago, playing, like, years ago.
You
can find that it's a ridiculous combination of items. Aren't that hard to play.
Did you ever see, there's a video... I think there's a hack involved, but someone was playing Vincent from FF7, and speaking of just overpowered things, there's a weapon Vincent has that the more enemies you kill with it, the more powerful it gets.
Oh, really?
So you stick with that weapon the entire game.
Nice.
And he's maxed out at level 99, and I think basically the only glitch is that it broke the damage cap.
Oh, really?
So, like, they just took away the damage cap of, you know, 9,000.
As high as you want,
right? So most times, though, like, you know, there is going to be a cap that a player can reach based based on their level, but this weapon...
The stats and everything, yeah.
With their stats, but this weapon doesn't... So, they have that... He literally goes up, he literally goes like takes his pistol out, does like a little thing, shoots Ruby weapon, insta-kills it in one shot, and then puts it back and then just walks away, and it just... It, like, you don't even see a number on the screen.
Yeah,
it just goes down.
That's beautiful. Vincent was the best character in any Final Fantasy game, that's my opinion.
100% agree. Yeah. But, yeah, so we talked about the gameplay and how it's really unique and how each character is kind of different than each other and you can build with that. So, like, what did you like about the characters in the game? And, like, how did they affect the gameplay?
Each character is super unique. Like, I love that every character you pick up, every story you go into, every backstory, each character has their own way of handling it. Like, the one scene pretty early on, Locke has to sneak out of a town. And he does that in his own way of killing guards and stealing their clothes and sneaking out of the town. And then from there, he goes to another town and does his thieving there. Like, I like the characters because they're super unique like that. You were a thief for a small part of the game. You were stealing clothes. You were a spy infiltrating.
It really seems like they took a lot of different game concepts and tried to put them in small implementations throughout the... I mean, like, we talked before about the RTS section with the Moogles.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Their interpretation of RTS, which I don't even know how many of them existed back in 94 when this game was being developed, at least.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. But then they have a stealth section with Locke trying to escape the town. But then you have...
I don't know if it's as much as combining different game styles as exploring...
Elements.
Yeah, exploring their own elements. Like saying, hey, you're a thief. Let's do some thief stuff. Hey, you're a king. Let's go do some king stuff. Like, when you have to discover what Edgar's doing in the Broken World.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, everybody's got their own thing going on after the Broken World happens. Even before that, they all have their own unique stories, their unique abilities that before they come into your game and you treat them as, hey, another fighter in my group. You know, they got their unique stuff going on, unique skill sets. Like, even the character you controlled for just the river scene, what was his name? The leader of the resistance. You know, all he had is a stick that could heal people. Like, he was a unique character. He played his role out really well, but, you know, nobody really remembers him. All he does is heal everybody, and then I think he gets killed later on. Yeah, he's pretty useless.
But so, we did talk about the gameplay, and we added a little bit more there. But to kind of finish this off, to kind of bring us, to kind of wrap up this episode, I want to talk about the legacy of the game. I want to talk about what this game means to not just you, but you and I, but like to gamers everywhere, as cliche as that sounds. But like, what did this game do that affected other games in the future?
Yeah, what impact? You know, obviously you can see from the Final Fantasy standpoint, where each Final Fantasy so far, because again, I only recognize the North American ones, because that's the only ones I played, 1, 2, or 4, 3, or 6, you know, 1, 2, and 3 in my mind, right? They all build on each other slowly but surely. You got the original one, hey, it's a game, it's a Final Fantasy, we made it work. Hey, we have Final Fantasy 2, we're introducing the five-character system, the side-to-side attacking, a little more live-action kind of fighting, and then 3 builds on that, where they give you your attack bar, you can see your speed, you can dive deeper into unique skill sets, unique magic, and it builds on it. And, you know, 7 and 8 and 9, I believe, build on it. They get attack gauges, you get magic, you can slash
active
people.
Time battling and whatnot.
Yep, exactly. And then each character in like 7 has their limit breakers, makes them unique. 8 has their characters. They all have the unique abilities again. So in the Final Fantasy genre, they all just build on each other.
And I would even say that, like, the storytelling aspects from 3 that we mentioned before, how dark it is, has affected other games in the future. Like, for a game that early in video game history to cover such dark subject matter of the poisoning of the castle, like, that's, and like, it leads into grief.
Yeah, there's a lot of grief. And like we said before, you have Locke's girlfriend who, because he made a mistake, who fell into a deep coma, and he blames himself. So he tries to help everybody he sees to make up for that. Like you said, you got the poisoning of the castle, where the knight, I always forget his name, the knight...
Cyan.
Cyan, yeah. He, immediately after the castle, they go to the ghost train, where you fight this, you get on this
train. It's
a train
to hell.
You get on this train, and this is where all the spirits get shuffled down to the spirit world, and you go through the whole train, you try not to get trapped, and go down the spirit world, you eventually beat this train, you know, sweet suplex it. But when you're getting off the train, you see his family boarding the train because they just died from the poison. So he's been holding on to all this grief, and the spirit train, you know, he's seeing his mother, or his wife, and...
And his daughter. I think it's his daughter.
Yeah. I believe it's his son, because, you know, it's a knight, you know, carrying a legacy. But his wife and his son boarding the train, and, you know, he's trying to get them off of it, call them, and they're accepting that they died and moving on.
It's a whole thing with him. Yet.
Yep, it's all him dealing with the grief that they literally just died probably half an hour ago in your game, and probably, like, a day or two ago in their world. So it covers a lot of grief, a lot of darkness.
That's a heavy subject to basically present children with. That's a very dark thing to show. Yeah. And like when Sid dies towards the end of the game, we mentioned, like that showing death in like a kind of like a, not in a gruesome way, but in a very like sad and open way.
Sober
just
way.
Like
yeah.
It's yeah, exact perfect.
Because that's what Cecil did. She woke up, and she realized how long that he had been taking care of her. And by the time she woke up and that she was able to help him, he was old, decrepit, tired, and he just died. Like, there was a whole scene with her on a cliff edge throwing flowers, thanking him pretty much for everything he had done for her.
And then you finally can move on with, then she's able to move on and reunite the rest of the band.
She can go and find the raft and get off the island and... metaphorically and physically, move on with her.
And I thought that was interesting. They chose Celeste as the main character once the world ends.
Yeah.
Like, that's the first character you see is Celeste. And I thought that's interesting. They chose her of all people because I didn't feel that connected to her. Like I was always felt like Tara and Edgar and Locke were the main characters,
right.
And then Celeste just kind of sneaks in on the side because she was a general of the Empire. I just remembered that now.
Yeah, she was a general of the Empire, and I think that's what makes her so interesting is because the world changed. She hasn't yet because she's just waking up. You see her slowly change. I mean, she was compassionate. Slowly coming around before, but now she has to be compassionate. She just watched this man die. She's going back into the world. Everybody's living their lives.
That is,
she's changing with the times. Like, she's been changing the whole game.
That literally just blew my mind.
Yeah, and
just
this
thinking about it like that.
World of ruin. Now she has to remind everybody what they were fighting for, everything that was happening before.
Because she's still in that mindset.
Because
like,
she's still in the mindset.
They...
Yeah.
Cause that's I didn't even think I totally didn't I forgot about that like
yeah,
I didn't
or
I didn't even think of
change,
it that way because
so
since she was asleep for a year I didn't even think of it that way. That seriously brings a whole
it was interesting. I liked her a lot, but yeah, I think every other game has just built off of that. I mean, if you talk about legacy
games. What I meant was like with the dark storytelling aspects, there's like a lot of games now cover that subject matter. Look at games like BioShock and look at games like Last of Us that cover there's no direct influence, but I don't think you would be able to take video game storytelling to the heights that it's been taken to without Final Fantasy III/6 some way, shape, or form. Because that dealt with so many dark things that you wouldn't expect, and now we are able.
Yeah.
Now we see how they dealt with it, and they can improve upon it.
Oh well, I mean, yeah, I mean, every generation of games gets a little more adult, mature, edgy, I guess. But
yeah.
I mean, well, as far as
I mean, the
SNES
average
gamer is
30
too.
Years now.
Yeah,
30 years. They're 30 years old.
We're getting that too.
Yeah. 35-ish or something like that.
No, but as far as the SNES generation goes, you won't find too many more darker games. Like, you know, there's like Earthbound, which is funny and kind of dark.
Like quirky.
Quirky.
I still haven't even played Earthbound yet, but
it's good. But it's not as dark as like the serious mature themes you would find in 3. And that's the thing, like 3 can be super hilarious with their like, you know, Edgar as the ladies' man and everybody pulling Edgar off people and, you know, just being super silly, but it's also got those like serious themes, and I feel like other games, especially the Final Fantasy series, takes off of that, borrows it to be super serious and then it's funny but still a serious tone.
Yeah.
I think that's its legacy, that it can be this dark but still be fun.
It draws that line.
Yeah, it draws a line at certain scenes. Like, it's a very,
or walks that line.
It's a very like scene by scene game. Like, this is this guy's scene, this is this character's scene, this is gonna be a happy scene, funny scene. Like, you can kind of break it down like that. Like, this is the storyline scene, this is the silly scene, and, you know, kind of meshes together really well. I think other games, you know, they do that now because we have the graphics, the power, but for a RPG, especially on the SNES, like, that was a big thing.
Yeah.
That was huge.
But all right, well, that pretty much wraps up this episode. Thank you all for listening. Thank you, Jamie, for coming in and talking about Final Fantasy VI. If you want to follow me, you can follow me at Still Loading Pod on Twitter, same on Facebook, at Still Loading Pod on Facebook. And if you would like to email me, you have at Still Loading Contact at gmail.com. Jamie, is there any place people can follow you, or do you not have any of those things?
Nope, but if you want me back on the show, just let me know. Sounds good. Always happy to talk about more classics.
But all right, so thank you all for listening, and I'll see you next week.
Good.
I'll be waiting in suspended animation for you to make innovations. But if the creation remains in homeostasis, then hip-hop, as you know, it remains basic, which makes it theoretically impossible to see me. Cause if I wasn't advanced, I probably wouldn't be me. And if I didn't exist on this physical plane, then there would never ever be another fitting of the name Random. And due to that paradox, this verse will be history. Hope it didn't confuse you like it did to me. So let me break it down in plain English. I can't be back if I never left. Me and K ain't finished.
I hear him talking, see him staring at me. And I am who I am, I'ma be what I be. And if that don't please you, then I'm cool with that. Tell them haters on the sideline, the rule is back. I hear him talking, see him staring at me. And I am who I am, I'ma be what I be. And if that don't please you, then I'm cool with that. Tell them haters on the sideline.
Gotta shout K for another banger. And Justin for Radio Freak Gamer. Came out pretty dope, so I gotta say thank you. Hit us up anytime, don't be a stranger. Gotta thank K for another banger. And Justin for Radio Freak Gamer. Came out pretty dope, so I gotta say thank you. Hit us up anytime, don't be a stranger.